those lovely notes from Giuseppe Verdi mean it's time for another edition of Serie A Sit Down, World Football Index's podcast designed by fans for fans of Calcio at the highest level. I'm Frank Crivello. Glad you've clicked on and gotten stuck in with us yet again. We are recap heavy, a little matter of Napoli v Juventus at the San Paolo. We're going to be all over that. Have a look at the rest of match week 30. Plus, we'll take a look at leg two of the Coppa Italia semifinals and then start taking a peek at match week 31. Want to introduce the panel, of course, fellow Calcio consultant, Milanisti, and friend Richard Carmen. Ciao, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing well, Frank. How are you doing this evening?
Are you sure about that? I mean, for Christ's sake, Pescara.
You know, I forgot about that game until just
Worst
now.
Worst damn
for
defense
it back
in the league, and they can only score one goal.
At the time, it was terrible, but right now I'm okay. But until you just reminded me of it, but thanks anyway.
Oh, you were in a good mood until then. No, I've been grouchy all day since that happened.
I forgot about it. I started doing some yard work, started being zen, getting a zen mode, and bam.
Is it yeah. Forgot or you repressed the memory?
Repressed. Let's be honest.
There are many games we've repressed from memory. You guys are hearing another voice, and that's our guest panelist. And he's from the mothership, World Football Index itself. And he's known as the resident cowboy of World Football Index. We welcome Mr. Dylan Baker. Ciao, Dylan.
How's it going, guys? I apologize ahead of time for anybody listening to me if I'm not up to standard to some of the fantastic guests that have been on this particular show. But I'm going to do my best.
We feel like we're either being sent to the principal's office or daddy's checking on us or something like
you
that.
You don't know this, but you're actually under review at the moment. No, I'm not.
we're long overdue for one. So, before we jump into Napoli Juventus, we'll take a minute here and just, cause I mean, we've got a good niche of listeners here and we've got, you know, we're growing obviously. And, we're not the only game in town on World Football Index, of course. So why don't you brief our listeners on some of the other things that they might find interesting?
There's a whole lot going on at the minute with World Football Index. We're always trying to expand. The main focus right now has been trying to build the website, as I'm sure you guys have seen. And I know that haven't seen a contribution yet, but that's okay. We're getting a lot of other stuff coming from a lot of different people. You just like this podcast and the many other podcasts that we have, the website we're trying to build, that sort of article that you want to read, not necessarily the match reports that get, sort of pushed off to the wayside. Yeah, let me glance through it and I'll check another website for the same thing. You know, we're trying to really give the folks who listen to the interesting stories and ideas and cultures and backgrounds that everybody gets the chance to hear on podcast, also in written form. So definitely give that a shout as well. That's been the biggest movement so far. As you guys have experienced, we're doing a little bit of revamping with the podcast to make sure that, you know, they're in the best possible state for listeners, as well as for contributors who take out their time to produce these. So, you know, beginning of 2017 thus far has been a lot more about housework, but at the same time, keep yourself posted, watch this space, as they say. We got some big things coming towards the end of the year that I won't reveal just yet, but I've got a funny feeling that you guys are going to like it.
And why don't you give our listeners that website that they can go to look for some of this content?
So the primary way that you can read these articles is worldfootballindex.com. You can find our podcasts all over the place. Also on the website at worldfootballindex.com/podcast. You can find them on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Player FM, on SoundCloud, which is where we tend to have most of our things. You can find a lot of our writers elsewhere. We've built quite the team thus far that write for a variety of different websites that include the Anfield Index, that include These Football Times, a couple other really big popular ones that are escaping me at the moment. So I apologize to those who write for them. But we've got some good writers on the site. Some names that you know, some names that you may not know yet, but you'll be happy to once you get the chance to read an article or two of theirs. So give the site a look. That's worldfootballindex.com.
And These Football Times, we've had a couple of writers for These Football Times on our own pods too. So here on Serie A Sit Down. So great stuff, guys that are very much, intimate with the game, if you will. A lot you can learn. Even if you're just a casual fan and you've found a team to support for the first time, I'm sure you can find some information on them, information about the league they play in, kind of have yourself better educated as you as you dive into this, because especially in North America, I mean, the European leagues, it's going beyond the English Premier League. I mean, there's growth in all these other leagues. I mean, La Liga has obviously exploded, and, you know, there's two big reasons why. But, you know, Bundesliga has a nice following. Serie A has a nice following. Liga is gonna grow a little bit here as, you know, there's getting money pumped into some of those teams. So, you know, it's getting more and more exciting, you know, from that aspect. And, you know, plenty of content, as Dylan said, on the website, for you to browse through and get yourself informed. If you don't want to, you know, listen to blowhards like Richard, myself, and Dylan, you know, for an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, if that's too much of your time, it might be something you might find that's a good read, and we won't be offended. Although we love seeing the numbers on some of the locations, on some of the apps that we can find our podcast put on. So
I will let you know, we actually made that a part of the application. If you want to write for the website, you can't be a blowhard, which is why you haven't seen an article of mine on the site yet.
Probably why I haven't written for the site yet. I haven't shed blowhard status. Rich is probably a little closer to that than I am. So, right, Richard?
No comment.
Okay. Well, excellent stuff. And yeah, guys, go on to worldfootballindex.com, check it out. And, you know, it's definitely an exciting time to be, especially for Serie A sit down. We love having the platform and being able to do what we do under the World Football Index umbrella, if you will. So plenty of other great stuff out there. I know I've had a chance to try to listen to a few podcasts as I can, you know, the Sound of La Liga guys, you know, Gavin in particular, I like picking on from time to time, and, you know, the Champions League podcast, Richard, I know you've been on that a couple of times, you know, Football Grad, I mean, Russian football. I mean, World Football Index has it all. So, all right. So that I think is enough of a good infomercial for the website, Dylan. How about we jump into this Napoli-Juve game?
Sounds like a plan to me.
All right, Richard, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, this was the marquee match of the weekend. It was at the San Paolo between Napoli and Juventus, third versus first. It was a homecoming of sorts for Gonzalo Higuain, and he was greeted with nothing but love and kisses blown from the fans and all sorts of endearing things. They all just sounded like really annoying whistles. So that's pretty much what happened. Nobody was really happy with his return. And the Napoli fan, if there's anybody that's going to make you feel like a traitor to them, it's going to be Napoli fans. So, and they had, they let Gonzalo Higuain have it just about every touch of the ball he took. So, you know, that set aside, we would find out over these 90 minutes if Juventus was ready to unofficially slam the door shut on this Scudetto race. We've been saying it's been over for a long time, but the right kind of result here could give some hope to the likes of a Roma and even a Napoli. So, but Napoli got caught with a little egg on their face here very early in the game. 7 minutes in, Sami Khedira hooked up with Miralem Pjanic.
Cerca l'1-2, Khedira! Rete! Rete! Juventus in vantaggio! Grandissima azione, penetrazione di Khedira!
The German popping up for the goal to give the visitors the lead 1-0. And it looked like, Dylan, here we go again with Napoli in a big game, right?
Absolutely. And it's one of those things where, you know, Napoli obviously over the course of the past several years they've been on the rise, whether it be because of the managers that they've had, the signings that they've made, whatever the case may be. They've been there or thereabouts, obviously, with the Juventus domination of the Scudetto for going on, I believe, 8 years now. You know, they've had quite the dry spell, as has everyone. But at the same time, they continue to find themselves in this kind of situation. And whether it be Juventus, Inter Milan, AC Milan over the course of the past, you know, even call it a half decade, this is a position that they often find themselves in, whether it be because of the players, whether it be because of stage fright, you know, it can come down game by game to a variety of different reasons. But that's one of the things that Napoli is going to have to improve as they inch themselves closer and closer to that title, is they have to learn to play without fear again. You know, you see young players do it all the time. They're going to have to relearn that art. Some players, as I'm sure you'll come on to, you know, the likes of your Marek Hamsiks, they don't, which is why, again, as we'll find out, he popped up again today. Always a big game player for Napoli. But building the team around that going forward has to be a crucial focal point.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And we kind of talked about this. We talked about this with the guys from Italian Football TV last week. There's a lack of steel to Napoli. For all the beautiful football that they're capable of playing, the attacking football that they're capable of playing with those three guys up front, with Callejo and with Mertens and Insigne, and then with Marek Hamsik playing behind in the midfield, they're capable of producing some wonderful stuff. I mean, some jaw-dropping football, and they've done it throughout the course of the season. But there's that backbone, and it's just missing. And you're ready. We're waiting for guys like Alan to pop up, and there are games where he shows signs of it, but it's not totally consistent. Kalidou Koulibaly was playing really well for a long stretch of time, but he's kind of tapered off a little bit. I think the problem for Napoli is twofold. I don't think goalkeeper has not been a strong suit for them the last several years. They've been going by what's left of Pepe Reina. He didn't play in this game. Rafael Cabral did. And then the lack of a partner for Koulibaly in the center of that defense. They've been trying to this game. It was Raul Albiol. They've been really trying to patch it together. They had Vlad Chiriches in there for a little bit, and we talked about this in podcast past. They brought in a couple of defenders, and they don't use them. Maksimovic, who was terrific for Torino, and is probably a logical reason for why Torino stink defensively right now. He's not there. And then on top of that, the other guy, Lorenzo Tonelli. They brought over from Empoli, who Maurizio Sarri knows. So it's, again, we're having this problem with that part of the pitch for Napoli. And, we're not there yet with them. And until they can get some kind of a backbone to go with all this wonderful play, it's hard to take them seriously as a contender. And that's exactly what I was thinking. Flipping over to the Juventus side, Richard, I mean, we could tell from the team sheet that came out an hour before kickoff, this was going to be resourceful Juve today, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could see from the beginning, like you said, from the lineup, that they were going to be playing for a draw. I mean, if they can get a win, great, but most likely they would settle for anything less but a draw. Obviously, they're preparing for the Coppa Italia matchup coming up later in the week. But you could tell they're resting some players, some key players like Dybala and Cuadrado. So, yeah, it was always going to be a professional matchup by Juventus, and I think that's kind of what we saw today.
Dybala came on as a sub in this game. Argentina didn't risk him here. He obviously had the injury before the international break. It appears to me that Allegri's bringing him back slowly. And, I mean, do you really think he starts on Wednesday as well? Or is this going to be one with a 3-1 lead? Bring him off the bench if they think they're going to need him.
Kind of much like today. They brought him in the 80th minute. I think it'll be something similar. With a 3-1 lead, why are you going to risk it? You have Barcelona coming up on the horizon. He's one of your key guys, and he has to be fully healthy for that matchup. So I say you sit him on the bench. If it gets a little tight, bring him in late in the game. Otherwise, just sit him. Why risk it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as vital as he is, for the success of this team for the rest of the season. I mean, for all intents and purposes, we went into this game thinking that Serie A is locked. If they're trying to win a treble, they've got to be smart about it, especially with a player of his caliber and the dimension of the dynamic that he brings to Juventus. So, but yeah, this was resourceful Juve, and you could tell. They went with Asamoah and Lichtsteiner as their fullbacks, and you only need to go that far. The Dani Alves and Alexandro didn't even play in this game. A player like Lamina was playing on the right side of midfield when that's usually Cuadrado's spot. So they really shuffled the deck in this game, with an eye on the second leg of that Coppa Italia, but probably with an even longer view of Champions League and just trying to manage things a little bit between now and then with that clash with Barcelona. So the game went into halftime by that 1-0 score and, not a whole lot of incident, to really get excited about for the balance of that first half. Napoli tried coming into the game. Juventus defended in numbers. Buffon wasn't terribly troubled at any rate, in that point. We get into the second half, a little more incident for Buffon as he was forced into a save at the 56th minute, but then it was on the hour. Napoli needed something. They really needed to get it going, and why not get a guy that's on our current team of the season, Marek Hamsik, popping up.
Attenzione, Mertens, 1-2, Hamsik, rete! Rete! Stavolta non sbaglia Hamsik! 1-1, esplode il San Paolo!
Just as Dylan said, Hamsik coming in with that equalizer, very well taken goal, a curler that Buffon had absolutely no chance at, squaring the match at 1-1 for Napoli. Dylan, we talked about Marek Hamsik. You just talked about him a few minutes ago. Let's extend that Marek Hamsik discussion because, you know, we have touted him as the under-the-radar guy in this Napoli setup. Just how important is he? And, you know, just how under-the-radar has he been? Everybody talks about Insigne, Mertens, Callejon, but, you know, Hamsik's the guy that's left out, isn't he?
He is, and it's interesting, too, in when you consider the fashion in which he's left out, because once upon a time it used to be Gonzalo Higuain and Marek Hamsik in terms yeah. of the players that you wanted to talk about on this Napoli side. And since the departure of Higuain, the logical thought process you go through is, well, of course, Hamsik's going to become even more important. Now he is, but as you said, under the radar, simply because not even just the goal scoring. Not even the fact that, you know, the likes of Insigne and Mertens and Callejon are really all that high profile, but because of the fashion in which they're going about their attacking play, that's all that anybody wants to talk about. And that's all well and good. I don't blame anybody yep. for that. The one thing that I will have to counter with is none of it would be possible without Marek Hamsik. He is the link from midfield yep. to the attack. He is yep. the guy who drops deep for the ball as well as brings it all the way forward. He is the motor that never stops running, regardless of the state of the match as well as the score of the match. If Napoli are up 4-0, he's still on his bike the entire time. And if they're down 4-0, he's trying to find a way in the last 10 minutes to score 4 goals. That's just the mentality that he has. The other benefit that you get with Marek Hamsik, just on kind of a small tangent, is that he's in a team with a lot of players that have been in and out of a variety of different teams who have been with Napoli for 3 or less years. Marek Hamsik has been a part of this team since he left from Brescia in 2007, at the end of the 2007-2008 season. This is a guy who not only is an excellent footballer, he is also in absolute unconditional love with the football club that he plays at. And that makes all the difference in the world in a game like this where you're 1-0 down and you're coming up on the hour and there's not really any kind of idea of whether or not you're going to be able to score that equalizing goal. That makes all the difference in the world. So he is an incredibly critical part of any Napoli side, any starting 11 that's put out there. And he's the kind of player that, you know, it's not just the fact that he plays for Napoli. It's coupled with the fact that as a talent, he could walk into 95% of the teams in Europe at any given point in time, and he is their new playmaker.
And 95% of the teams in Europe would love to have him. I know that we'd love to have him at Milan, that's for sure. does this roll for him? I mean, obviously it suits him. You know, when he's got to go back to his national team at Slovakia, there might be a little bit more of a responsibility, or is, you know, Slovakia starting to set up that way a little bit where he can kind of work behind, because they've got guys like Vladimir Weiss, they've got Nemec, they've got Roger McNow, you know, popping up. You know, if I'm Slovakia's manager, I'm taking a look at this and saying, you know, I could probably do a system like this and I can put Hamsik in the exact same role.
Well, and it's beneficial to do so, not only because it allows for the kind of play that Napoli plays for, but as Slovakia, it begins to increase their attacking talent and continue to have some of your same old defenders in behind, but do the job for the profile that Slovakia has on the international stage. It would be a good idea. The other benefit of playing him a little bit deeper and allowing him to bring the ball forward is, A, he's excellent with the ball at his feet, and he's got vision that's not unparalleled by any sense of the phrase, but in terms of what Slovakia has to offer as well as what Napoli has to offer, it is without rival. So whenever you give him that sort of playmaker, you dictate the tempo of the game kind of role, then it allows everybody else to play at his speed. And the nice part about that is he's got the knowledge of the way that football is supposed to be played to know how to speed up and slow down as the game progresses. The other benefit is, realistically, the guy's not old, he's getting older. And as he continues to get older, he's going to slow down. And as he continues to slow, you know, he used to be a little bit more of an ornery bastard playing up in the, you know, just behind the striker. And as he's not necessarily fully capable of doing that anymore, it allows Hamsik to do what he does best in a role that fits his abilities as they continue to decline over time. So it gets him used to the role now to make sure that he is continuing to improve upon that role. And it would be, again, especially with the talent that Slovakia is starting to bring in from some of the youth that are coming through, as their attack develops, they can use somebody like Hamsik to allow them the freedom of movement, the freedom of will in terms of expression of that talent, and hopefully move them up in terms of Slovakia's prominence on the international level.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, agree to all of that. It's, you know, we see that with players sometimes. As the older they get, you know, put them into a more, they're more effective. You can drop them into a more deep-lying role where they're not asked to cover as much ground, you know, and you get them with some enforcers in the midfield that can do all the dirty work and do all the tackling. So he's freed up to do all the playmaking and, you know, dictate the tempo when they have the ball. So, you know, I think that's a role that's going to continue to fit. And he's doing it at Napoli, you know, and the more he gets comfortable with it. And it seems like he just, you know, he's doing, like you said, his love for the club. You know, it seems like it's something that it's a role that he's growing into. Richard and I just love it when somebody that we tout and put in our team of the season so far, a Squadra Pinota, pops up and scores a goal in a big game. Right, Richard?
Absolutely. I mean, it shows that they're listening to our podcast and that they feel the excitement. That's what I get from it, you know?
They know they have a standard to live up to when they're named to this team.
And they don't make us look like idiots too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very hard. So
absolutely. So the Hamsik goal, it was he was played in by Dries Mertens. It leveled the match at 1. Just 4 minutes later, Napoli could have gone ahead. Dries Mertens had a shot, hit the woodwork, eventually getting saved in no incident. And there really wasn't much, you know, to talk about beyond that, which is a little bit disappointing for such a marquee game. You wondered if Napoli was going to go on and get that second goal, you know. But as the game went on, I mean, Richard, Paulo Dybala came on, Juan Cuadrado came on. You know, clearly Allegri, you know, made some positive substitutions to still try to get all 3 points out of it. But the way that Juventus carried themselves in this game, it just felt like to me that they were okay with just a point out of this.
Yeah, like you know, much like I said earlier, it's a very professional performance by Juventus. They went out there and they said, you know, we're gonna get a draw at minimum. You know, you're gonna have to earn this victory, and you're not gonna get it, but you know, you can try. You know, bringing on Dybala and Cuadrado late to me was more of a sign of just saying, hey, you guys are gonna try to, you know, get your legs back. You know, we want you ready and healthy for when Barcelona comes to town. So, you know, it was a very professional performance. You know, Higuain, who's been scoreless in, 5-6 games now?
Yeah.
They got to get him going no matter what. But, you know, everybody else, the team, it was just the defense was solid. I mean, as soon as they got that goal by Kadira, you could see that the team just dropped back. And, you know, you couldn't try to beat Juventus when they're, you know, as good as they are defensively. When they get a goal up, it's going to be pretty hard to score on them after they go up because they're going to go drop back defensively, and now you're playing into their game. They're going to go on counterattack when they can, but they're going to be very, very, you know, very clean back there, not risk anything too much. And that's pretty much what you saw. I mean, Napoli did give it a go a little bit. You know, there was a few minutes where, I mean, that goal in the 60th minute was building. When they had a chance in the 56th minute, like you said, and you're thinking, okay, Napoli are going to try to make a game out of this. And sure enough, you know, Hamsik scores. And then Mertens almost scored a couple minutes later. But other than that, Juventus pretty much bottled them up, you know. And it was also good to see Chiellini back and not get injured. There's one play in the game where I thought he got injured, but it was just an elbow for Mertens in the face, which I thought he faked, but it actually was a legitimate foul for once. You know, you see Chiellini on the floor, usually it's just him diving around, but that was real, that one.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, no controversy in this game,
which was nice.
Yeah, great to see in a big game. I think we all, you know, we've beaten the Juve Milan game to death, you know, and we've seen more than enough examples of, you know, of some, you know, decisions where the referee, you know, whether we say referees don't decide games. Yeah, they do. You know, and that didn't happen here.
You know, I don't know if you guys knew this, but before the game, you know, everyone knew that Higuain was coming back, you know, coming back to Napoli. They handed out these small little whistles, you know, just to annoy him when he got the ball, whenever he got the ball. You could barely hear it on TV, but it was definitely presence in the game, you know, because they hate him. Every time he got the ball, they were whistling, they were screaming at him. You know, it was interesting to see or hear.
But they love him. They're building a statue for him. Are they not?
Not in Napoli, no, not so much. Maybe in Argentina, no, not even there.
Yeah, it's you know, it's going to be an awfully heavy statue because he looks to me like the kind of guy that once his playing days are over, he's just going to let himself go.
He already has a little bit.
Yeah, he has, hasn't he?
But so, you know, you were saying that, you know, we finally got a game with no controversy or anything, but of course they didn't live up to the hype as well. It was a pretty dull game. You know, you'd like to see the hype or the gameplay that it was, you know, Inter versus Juve or Milan versus Juve without the controversy. But no, we got a dull game with no controversy. You kind of wish there was controversy just to spice up the game. I don't know.
Dylan, is this title decided? Or did this draw today, you know, Juve 74, Roma 68, each with 8 games to play? Did this result end up leaving the door open ever so slightly for Roma?
I think it did. I didn't really realize it. I was kind of in the same vein as the two of you, for, you know, really I would say, if we're being honest with ourselves, probably the last 3 months, we knew that this was more than likely going to be the result. But really taking a look at it, you know, Roma is on 68 points. And that seems like a small thing to admit whenever a league table is Googleable anywhere. But the main thing to keep in mind is not only are they on 68 points, they have a better goal scoring record. While they don't necessarily have the same defensive record, the benefit of having the goal scoring record and Edin Dzeko being in the same level of form and Mohamed Salah popping up with an assist again over this past weekend, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later. You know, the benefit of having that kind of attacking prowess is, as we've seen in recent history in other leagues, you can beat a slightly more leaky defense if you have an insane offense. And while Juventus has a brilliant defense, not unrivaled, but very, very close to it, there is a chance that there can be some slipping. There's only 6 points difference between them now. 2 slip-ups. If Roma can go, you know, say undefeated for the last 8 matches, which obviously would be a brilliant run for Roma. But, you know, really all Juve has to do is drop 2. And all of a sudden it's going to come down to, you know, the tiebreakers. What's the difference between these two teams and how do they play each other? You know, what's the goal difference between them? You know, it's not wide open by any sense of the phrase. 6 points is a big gap to bridge in 8 games whenever you are going up against a team of Juventus's quality. But it is definitely open. I do believe without the win today, the door is shut on Napoli, but not on Roma, not yet.
Yep. Well, 3 of those points could get dropped on May 14th when Juventus travel to the Olimpico to play Roma. So, you know, towards the end, it's just a matter of finding those other 3, you know, finding where those other 3 are going to be dropped. So, and that's always tricky when you talk about Juventus. So, Marek Hamsik, the man of the match for you guys in this one?
Yeah, I mean, Napoli, I don't think would have had an offense if it was not for him. It was brilliant. I mean, the goal that he scored, it was a beautiful, you know, play with Mertens there. But, you know, he was stringing along the offense there for most of the game. So if it were not for him, it probably would have been a 1-0 victory for Juventus, in my opinion.
Well, and with Juventus, like you said, Richard, the main thing for them is that, you know, this is a better result for them as they play away from home. But at the same time, because they went about the match in the way that they did, because Higuain wasn't really present, you know, because you didn't have much coming from your rested fullbacks whenever you bring in Lichtensteiner and Asamoah, you don't have your usual suspects popping up as you normally would. So while Juventus were the better team on the day because they got the better result of the two, I don't think that anybody on their side really is deserving of man of the match.
Yeah, I mean, overall for me, it was a blah game. I'll tip it to Marek Hamsik. I was trying to think of a holding midfielder or somebody, you know, because there was a lot of tackling, a lot of ball winning between the two. you could give a shot to Kadira. I mean, especially with him scoring a goal. I know Dylan doesn't like hearing that.
He almost had a costly turnover late in the game too. So, I mean, that could have been a big difference there. But, yeah, Kadira is a good name to call.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at the goal scorers here because they not only did they score the goals, but they had key roles in how the result presented itself beyond scoring. So, which you don't often see. You know, somebody's getting all the glory, scoring all the goals, but there's somebody behind the scenes doing all the dirty work. Doing the tackling and doing the ball winning and that sort of thing. And then, you know, Hamsik is not a tackler and a ball winner by any stretch of the imagination. He plays with high energy, dictates things when Napoli have the ball. There's not one thing that Sami Khedira is elite at. He does a lot of things really well. You know, is that fair to say about him?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And he's done it for multiple clubs at the highest level.
Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, that's kind of how I would characterize it. I mean, I'll give it to Hamsik because I thought that, you know, Napoli played for the win. Juventus played for, you know, a draw doesn't kill us kind of mentality. So the fact that Hamsik did get that goal in is a wonderfully taken goal. And the fact that Napoli had their chances to win this game, you know, they were very few and far between, but, you know, they had more chances. I think that they had more attempts on target than Juventus did. You know, that's for sure. I want to say that, you know, Napoli had 5 shots on goal. Juventus just had 2, with one of them being the Khedira goal. So, you know, but great game. Listeners, your thoughts on this Napoli-Juve game, your thoughts on this Scudetto race. Is it over? Or is Roma back in this? Go to @SeriaSitDown on Twitter or on Instagram with your thoughts. Let's get to the rest of the slate. And this time, Richard, I've got no real quirks about the transition music. I've run out of ideas.
You're slowly loving it.
It's growing on me. Maybe I'll play it for my son sometime and see what he thinks. And if he likes it, I'll try getting into it. Dylan, have you listened to the podcast since we put in the transition music and some of the stuff from Lega Serie A?
I've heard the goal noise. I haven't heard the transition music.
Okay. since you're probably going to be interested in hearing yourself talk, you'll probably.
Oh,
hear
I'm
that
very too. Interested.
Let's just say Nainggolan approves of the music.
Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
It's Raja Nainggolan type stuff. So
awesome.
it's something you would hear at a club. So, but anyway. Let's get into this, the rest of this match week 30 slate. And, the action started on Saturday. First to go was Sassuolo and Lazio that ended 2-1 to the visitors. An upset was on the cards though. Domenico Berardi striking in the 26th minute from the spot. But Lazio would have an answer just before halftime through who else, but Ciro Immobile.
16 metri, bello il tocco per Immobile, pallone in rete, ancora una volta Ciro il Grande non sbaglia.
That is Immobile's 50th career Serie A goal, and it only took him 112 Serie A appearances to do it. Lazio did push for the winner, and they were so unsuccessful, and Francesco Acerbi felt bad for them. decided to put the ball in his own net. He said, here, guys, let me show you how it's done. The problem is that Acerbi plays on Sassuolo, put it into his own net, and that's how Lazio go on and win and get the 3 points. So Lazio moving on. And Dylan, a little bit about Ciro Immobile. Nice. Now that he's got that home cooking, he's scoring like crazy again, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He was one of those players where watching him in his previous stint at in the Serie A, you thought for sure that he was going to be one of the next big Italian strikers, especially when you know, Italy are so devoid of them. It's easy to get very, very hopeful about someone of his quality. And that's not to take anything away from the kind of striker that he is or his talent as a striker, but it does seem to be a lot more beneficial or at least a lot more useful in Serie A itself. His attempt at Borussia Dortmund did not end so well. Now he's back at Lazio. He's finally back in and around and fit and firing, which is great. You know, any credit for 50 goals in a league, especially in 112 games, you have to give it to the guy. The other benefit, I believe, in terms of Immobile's role in the, this Lazio team is with the departure of Miroslav Klose, as well as, you know, not really having very much to speak of in terms of who would replace him. I think Immobile got the role that he wanted. He can come into a good team, make it better, as well as be regarded as the clear-cut number one. And especially by marking his 50th goal today, if that's not apparent to the Lazio backroom staff just yet, it should be by now.
Absolutely. Hey, did you guys, on that Immobile goal, you know, Felipe Anderson, with that pass, he led to it was a brilliant pass. I mean, he fed it to Immobile in a place where he had to run to get it. It wasn't at first. You looked at the pass and you're like, "Where is he passing it to?" But I mean, it was perfectly weighted to Immobile. He just shot it right past the goalkeeper. I mean,
Felipe Anderson is one of those guys that I don't know how he's still in Serie A. I don't know how some of these other bigger clubs haven't come in and yacked this guy away from this club.
He's a constant in our Squadra Finora. I think he's been all season.
Yeah, he's been in our Squadra Finora the entire season. Absolutely. On that right-hand side, we just have not bothered to take him off. He's another guy. I mean, he does it from a wide position. He does a number of things really, really well. You know, he's not, you know, he's not an elite player in any particular category, but he excels at a lot of different things. He does a lot of different things well. I mean, he, you know, the assist that he had for Immobile here, but the, you know, the, you know, he wins tackles, he intercepts balls. He's willing to do the dirty work from a wide position. You normally don't, you don't see that with wingers, you know. They just want to, you know, they don't want to be bothered. They don't want to be touched. And they want to play high and wide and let other people behind them do the dirty work, get the ball so that they can get it and they can say, hey, here, you know, like Ronaldo. Hey, look at how good I look with the ball. You know, look at how your statue looks now. So.
Let's not go there. I won't be good for the rest of the podcast if we go there. But one of the things that I really enjoy about Felipe Anderson, and it speaks to the extra work that he does, is that if you look at the way that Felipe Anderson plays, and it's beneficial not only from when Klose was there and from when Georgievich was the leading man, but it also works well for Ciro Immobile, is that the way that he plays, he's not only highly adaptable based on what's surrounding him, but he's good at a variety of different roles. He can play on the right or the left. He can play as a winger. He can play as an inside forward. He can play as the primary playmaker. It doesn't really matter how you utilize Felipe Anderson. He's going to go in, he's going to do the job, and he's going to do it well. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, typically a right winger, you don't see him on the left side of the pitch, you know, after cutting inside, playing in that particular ball for the Ciro Immobile goal. But there he is. There he is popping up doing it. He's been doing it all this season. He did it all last season. And I'm continuing to believe that this is not the best Felipe Anderson that we've seen. So he's still got some growing to do as a player, and it's going to be interesting to see talent-wise where he ends up.
Definitely agree with you. And I hope he remains in Serie A. I hope he plays the rest of his career in Serie A. I hate seeing the big guys go. I'd mentioned it a few months ago, saying that, you know, and I know that you're a Liverpool fan, Dylan. If Philippe Coutinho was ever to leave, because there was rumors about him. I know.
But I can't handle it. If we got Felipe Anderson, I can't handle it.
No?
I can't handle it.
Even if Coutinho
didn't leave and you pushed him back into the eight role where he can bring the ball forward and you put Felipe Anderson on the left, oh, God.
Exactly my point. I mean, you talk about all of these things he does. He is a Jurgen Klopp guy, you know, but I want him to stay in Italy. So, Serie A fans, I'm not vouching for this guy to leave. I want him to stay on the peninsula. But if he was to go somewhere, that is a glove-like fit. You know, and Klopp's first call shouldn't be to Marco Reus. It should be to Felipe Anderson. So, but, you know, that be that as it may, he's a Lazio player. Let's enjoy him. Let's hope we're enjoying him for the duration of his career. That's a decision that Lazio is going to probably have to make this summer. A lot of it's going to depend if they can actually sneak up and catch Napoli for third in Serie A, because that's not out of the question. The other game on Saturday, Roma 2, Empoli 0. The Giallorossi took care of business as they look to secure their Champions League place for next season, and now have the door ever so slightly open to catch Juventus for the Scudetto. They had a reliable source for their goals as Edin Dzeko took his place atop the Capo Cannonieri chart.
In mezzo a cercare sarà il colpo di testa. Dzeko! Edin Dzeko, segna sempre lui, 2-0 Roma.
His brace leading the way for the hosts. We've spoken about Dzeko so much, in this podcast, guys. It looks like he's just gonna race out for this thing at this point. And with the quality of service that he's getting, no wonder he's so successful. Richard?
Yeah, I mean, what you see with him is, I mean, if you look at the Capo Cannonieri race between him and Belotti, Belotti seems to be doing it all on himself. You know, he's not really getting the help that Dzeko's getting. Dzeko's got the service. Dzeko's gotten guys who can create the play for him, and all he has to do is finish. He's a poacher. He's exactly what you need in a team with playmakers around him. Belotti's
and these two,
yeah, go ahead.
And these two goals were poachers' goals.
Exactly.
Finishing the flick off from Rudiger on the corner, and then just being in the right spot at the right time and Dylan alluded to it earlier, Mohamed Salah doing all the dirty work.
Exactly.
It's positioning, but that's my point. He's got players getting in position to just set him up, and to your point, Richard, he's a poacher, and he's a damn good one.
Yeah, and with the guys set up around him, he's gonna be poised to score goals week in, week out. There's gonna be no letdown because he's constantly getting that service, and they have plenty of playmakers. Where if one player is not playing so well, someone else is gonna step in. If Salah's not playing well, El Shaarawy's gonna come in, or Nainggolan, or whomever, Perotti. They got that constant assist man that's in there to help feed Dzeko, because all he needs is the ball in his area and he's going to finish it off. So,
well, and because of the way that he as an individual striker is built, the benefit of that is, and to your point, Richard, is that because he can score any way that he wants to, not only because he's a poacher and that's his nature, but also because his size lets him be the big guy in the box. His speed, yep, not that he's super fast, will let him glaze past a variety of different defenders in Serie A. Because he has that ability, it can come from someone cutting inside like a Perotti. It can come from a winger like Salah. It can come from either one of the wingbacks. It can come from Raja Nainggolan, having a, crack at an absolute belter from 35 yards and him picking it up, him picking up the scraps. It can come from anywhere. And he's not only has the talent, but also has the build to ensure that he will always be there and thereabouts.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And, we talked about this. It's going to be it's somewhat interesting. It's worth having an eye on. I mean, we still think that Juventus is going to end up winning this thing, but I think we're now on a seesaw with Roma. We loved them and believed them at the beginning of this calendar year, and then they just foolishly go out to Lyon in the Europa League. They lose at home to Napoli, in Serie A, and they start becoming that Roma that just, it just gets so annoying with them every season because the talent is there and they can't get to that next stage.
It's like they have flashbacks to the Roma that we've seen for the past 8 years. It's like they've moved past it, but then they go to sleep one night and they have a dream about it and they're like, oh wait, that's what we're supposed to be. And then they end up playing that way. The nice part is that because of the way that the table is set at the current time, it showcases, and especially for Roma fans, that they are very, very close to leaving that era of Roma behind. And I can only imagine with a couple of signings, with the right tactical setup, that they can be poised in the next year, in the next 2 years, to be this same level of challenger, if not even closer to Juventus than where they are now. They probably aren't quite ready yet, and that's okay, because they are having these flashbacks. A little bit more time, that PTSD is going to go away. It's going to rescind, and they're poised to be a power in Serie A. And for such a long time, there's only been the one true power, and now we could be potentially looking at their primary rival going forward.
You know what's the interesting thing, though? Because, we'd say, every year Roma, they seem to falter. They got the hiccup, the memory recall, or what have you. But, after this, the last couple of weeks, they kind of had that little hiccup, and now they seem to be back on track really quickly, which is good for them and good for Serie A. Spalletti made some comments over the last couple of weeks saying, I think this is my last season at Roma. I'm not sure if I want to continue. Did you guys hear that, or did I just see that or dream that? I'm pretty sure he said that. And it'd be interesting to see who they're going to have going forward if he does step down. Who's going to progress Roma to the next step to challenge Juventus.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't hear that about him. You know, interesting for him to say that after, you know, when we had John Solano on a few weeks ago, that, you know, when they were talking about the, we had him on talking about the new stadium, Stadio della Roma, that'll be ready 2020, you know, 2021 kind of in there, where he mentioned Spalletti's name as one of these people that said, you know, Roma really need this. And, you know, almost in a tone that Spalletti wants to be part of this long term. So for him to bounce back and say, I don't know how much longer I want to do this, there must be, I don't know if it's because of the gentleman that's coming over from Sevilla. The name escapes me right now.
Sampaoli?
Not Sampaoli, no, the sporting director.
Oh, yeah. What's his name?
Monchi.
Monchi.
Not
yeah.
Monchi. No,
but yeah. We know who you're talking about.
It's not Monchi.
Monchi, yeah. No. So I don't know if this is an appointment that Spalletti is uncomfortable with. You know, that could be brought about. It's not a, you know,
maybe his emotions sometime. Too. Maybe it's just emotions of, you know, being on the downside for a little bit, and he's thinking it's the same old. So maybe it's just emotions speaking. Maybe after the season he'll be like, you know what, never mind, I'm staying.
Yep. You never know. But that could always be something. And Dylan, you wanted to chime in real quick about Empoli.
Yeah, briefly, and just say that even though they are outside the relegation zone right now, I personally feel that Empoli is the saddest team to watch in all of Serie A.
Oh, they can't score.
And it's they can't score. And it's insane that they can't score, because they have the talent. I was looking at some of the stats. Most of the stats that I gathered today come from a couple of different websites, the main one being 442 and their stat center. One of the things that I was looking at today is they matched, or very, very nearly matched, attacking third passes that Roma had in this particular match. They had 117 to Roma's 138 passes in the attacking third, and they had very similar completion rates. They were at about 78-80%. The problem is that Roma created 18 chances and scored 2 goals. Empoli created 3 chances that were all outside the box, and they had no goals. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know what it is that you're missing. I don't know if it's a replacement for Maralunga or Thiem. I don't know if it's getting a better playmaker in behind the two of them. I haven't seen enough of Empoli play to really pinpoint the problem, but oh my goodness gracious, it is not pretty.
No, it's been ugly. I'll jump in real quick, Richard. You know, Thiem is an intriguing guy to me, and if he has enough support around him, I think that he can be a pretty good player. And the player that they just brought over from Napoli, Omar El Kadouri, I saw some of this game yesterday. I thought he was useful. You know, I think he could be that spark that probably propels them and helps them stay safe. You know, and we've talked about, had it not been for some of the performances of the goalkeeper who's on loan from Roma, Skorupski, they'd be dead last. But Richard, what did you want to say?
You know, I think the silver lining in all this, at least for Skorupski's sake, is that, you know, it was kind of like a showcase to his team, you know, his ownership, because, you know, he's owned by Roma. So basically he's like, hey, give me the best you got and I'll show you what you got. I thought he was fantastic today, despite the 2-0 loss. And his team is pretty pathetic. But Skorupski is the one player that Empoli has that actually has any kind of talent, I think, really.
Well, and the interesting thing that we're going to have to keep an eye on is that he's actually not interested in going back to Roma.
Really?
I didn't catch that. And I think, well, I was listening to the commentary on the game, through BN Sports Connect, because BN Sports, the actual channel, decided they wanted to play PSG Monaco because
don't get me started on that.
Like they're even important. I know they have a lot of money, and I know that. But anyway, he made the mention that Alisson could end up being the goalkeeper of the future for Roma if they can't get things worked out with Szczesny, and that Skorupski is in fact third in the pecking order. As far as how Roma sees it, this was according to who I was listening to giving the call in the game.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know if Roma actually feel that way. Monchi might come in and say, no, what the hell are you guys doing? Bring this guy back here. He's our starter. So, you never know with these things. So, but it'd be interesting as Empoli's going forward. We're going to talk. We actually got to talk about them a little bit here, a little bit later on as we get into the Sunday recaps. But we'll start with the first game from Sunday, which was the game of the weekend in terms of entertainment value. And if you lived in North America and got up early enough for it and jumped on a computer or caught it on TV, it was well worth it. Torino 2, Udinese 2. The Zebrette showing their intentions in this one as they hope to snag a top hack finish. They would open the scoring through Jakob Jankto.
Punta la porta. Jankto calcia! E c'è il gol dell'Udinese! Sinistro alla dinamite di Jakob Jankto! Segna ancora il numero 14!
That strike taking place just before halftime. The visitors would go and double their lead through Croatian international Stipe Perica. But the Granata would eventually wake up. Just after that second goal, it was Emiliano Moretti pulling one back to make it 2-1, setting the stage for guess who to equalize.
Allarga per Zappacosta, poi si butta dentro il cross di Zappacosta verso Belotti! Il Gallo Belotti! Apre l'azione, la va a chiudere! Fa 23 in campionato!
That Andrea Belotti goal puts him level atop the scoring chart now with Aiden Dzeko, and it seems like this is Torino's incentive the rest of the way. Dylan, I think Richard and I will pat ourselves on the back because I think that we touted Andrea Belotti before Andrea Belotti really started getting touted. As someone that, you know, talk about him and talk about how good is he from what you've seen of him.
From what I've seen, I remember the discussion, I believe it was before the turn of the year, where the discussion that you guys were having was whether or not Belotti was currently in a string of form or if he was class. And correct. I think that this particular stage, I think when you guys were talking about him, I was under the impression and in very much in agreement with you, Frank, that it was primarily form. I think at this stage, if he's keeping up with someone of the class of Edin Dzeko, and you have to assume that by the goals that he scores, that it's by no means just an accident that he's in this strand of form, because he's basically been here all season. We're going to have to start attaching class to this player at some stage, and I think the time, if it's not now, it's very, very close. This is going to be the kind of player that, you know, especially with the difficulty of purchase that you guys have covered, especially whenever he leaves the league, it's going to be really, really difficult for him to leave Serie A. At the same time, if you can build a team around his goal-scoring talent and bring Torino up the table, then all of a sudden you've got a Torino side that's very, very dangerous. You know, this is a team that, you know, like you alluded to earlier, with the loss of a couple of different players, specifically in the defense and the holding midfield, like Maksimović to Napoli, this is a team that's very, very potent up front. They're the only team around them that scored the amount of goals that they have. They sit in the lone 56 goals scored with 50 conceded, which is insane to me. So if they can look to improve that defense and continue along this attacking strand, then Torino can be feared. At the current stage, they're not there yet. But Belotti is. And the big fear for Torino is if they don't follow up suit very, very quickly, then he will be gone. Someone will pay the money for him, and he will go.
How did he not get out of this game with a hat trick, Richard?
Oh, he was everywhere. I mean, I think he had like two posts. He had he forced the goalkeeper to make, you know, like 3-4 saves. I mean, he was everywhere. I mean, those goals that he scored were fantastic. This is just a great player, and he's seemingly doing it all by himself. I mean, he really doesn't have any help. I mean, yes, you got Iago Falque and company. But really, it's just Belotti. It's just him overpowering the other team by himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take – it is going to take a lot of money for somebody if they're going to pry him away from Torino. And we had, you know, Marco and Michael made the comment last week that the Torino owner, Cairo, said, I didn't know he was this good. I would have put the clause in for $150 million and not
$100. Yeah, exactly.
So – he's just flirting with that. He's flirting with class now. Excellent performance from him. And it took that just for Torino to get a point, you know, because to Dylan's point, how good would Torino be this season if they actually had some defenders in front of Joe Hart? I mean, there's some games where we can point at Joe Hart and laugh, but the defending has been shocking from this team.
Absolutely. And if you look in and around the table, the big thing for them is that 56 goals scored. Obviously, they've scored more than everybody below them. But more importantly, they've scored more than Fiorentina. They've scored more than AC Milan and Inter Milan and Atalanta and Lazio. And they've almost scored as much as Juventus. And that's primarily because of that front three. Because as much as with all the hype that is around Belotti, it is very, very easy to shirk Jagic off to the side. He's a very, very good off that left wing. And they have the fullbacks for it. Zappacosta is an excellent attacking fallback. Molinaro is good for support play. It's really the two center backs that are letting them down, as well as you get somebody in there that's a better central defensive midfielder than Lukic, then you're gonna end up better off as well. Not that he's terrible, but he is upgradable. You know, and again, if you've got this attacking prowess, cut those goals in half, and you're talking about Torino in Champions League places, which is insane, which is absolutely insane.
They have the attacking prowess. And, you know, like you said, they do score a lot of goals. They're only one of two teams with Napoli to score, they have three games of five goals or more. That's crazy. I mean, they're scoring on Napoli's level, basically, without the defense, of course.
I definitely agree to all. I definitely agree to all that you guys are saying here. So, going to be interesting to see what Torino does in the offseason. I mean, they got to keep their man first and foremost, and I think that's going to be Caro's priority. If he can do that, get some defenders, get an upgrade on Lukic, then they could be a very scary team in 2017-2018. Palermo 1, Cagliari 3. The Rosanero got in front through Giancarlo Gonzalez in the first half, and then it was world-renowned midfielder Arto Ionita striking for the visitors with a signature brace.
Servito in area, Ionita con sinistro! Il gol è convalidato! La doppietta di Artur Ionita!
Richard, who the hell is Artur Ionita?
Apparently he's the guy who goes out and scores a brace, because I do not know who he is.
Did they just drag this guy off the streets of the Sardinian island and say, hey, we need some help, get out there?
I think so. I
didn't get time. I would have compelled myself to at least to try to do a little bit of research on this guy before jumping onto this pod.
Google said I don't know who he is.
No, they didn't. They didn't. When Google says I don't know who he is, they say, neither do we. it's crazy. I mean, just looking at the formation, I mean, Cagliari is in a 4-3-1-2, and he's in that midfield three on the left. So, just some situations where he pops up and scores a couple times. He got an assist from Tuxedis on his second, which was Cagliari's third. And then it was Marco Borriello popping up and scoring another goal again. Man, he's put up quite a tally this season for Cagliari and a big reason why they're able to survive at this point.
He's having a very good season.
Yeah, he has. He's found some of that form again. I think he's one of those guys that you take him out of the big name. He'll flourish with these smaller clubs and with the provincials. Because it was prior to joining Milan, he was at Genoa, and I think he had a season where he scored 17 goals.
Right.
I mean, 10 of them were penalties, but let's not. You know, you still got to score penalties. Ask Simone Zaza how hard it is to make a penalty.
I love that the one that I'm on, that gets brought up. That's fantastic.
Oh, we bring that up every week. We don't. Yes. You know, it's never going to be not funny. and it was depressing at the time, but now we can, a few months removed, we can just laugh at it. So, Marco Borriello is having a nice season. He's one of those guys, get him in these provincial teams or get him in these smaller teams and he'll perform. But you get him into the big city and you get him into the bright lights and, for some reason it just hasn't worked out. And he was okay for Milan. He wasn't going to remind anybody of Shevchenko, but he was decent. But this was a good win for Cagliari. I mean, they're at a point right now where they're safely playing up the stretch on 35 points in 13th. Palermo, boy, if they could have found a way to win this, they would have been sitting in a great spot. They let this one get away. A relegation team that did not let one get away was Crotone. They went away to Chievo and 1-2-1. Richard, Crotone, it could happen.
Yeah, it's crazy. That goal by Facinelli, it was a fantastic goal, by the way. You wouldn't have thought they were such a bottom feeder with that goal. But yeah, hey, they're getting wins and against Chievo. Chievo, you would think, should have won this game handily, and they did not. They underperformed. Yes, Sergio Plissier scored that goal to equalize, but like I said, Falcinelli found a way to give them the win. It was a good win for the guys. Good.
That's that a way to celebrate your. That's a way for Sergio Plissier to celebrate his 50th birthday, scoring a goal. So, got a lot of old men scoring goals in this league, Dylan.
Serie A has always been a league for older guys too.
Yeah, and Macaroni scoring a goal last week. I mean, these guys are just you're getting dragged out of the retirement homes, and they're popping up and scoring goals. So
I heard Baggio's trying to come back.
Baggio could probably play in this league. So we talked about Maldini last week. Chievo 1, Crotone 2. That puts Crotone now only 5 off of Empoli from safety with 8 games to go. And
it
if
could
Empoli
happen.
Can
it could happen.
If Empoli continue to have their struggles, I mean 5's a stretch to make up for a relegation battler, but you know, we've seen weirder things happen.
And to speak to that free fall of Empoli, I know we've already talked about them. 1 point in 9 Serie A matches. Point in 9 matches.
Not good.
That is free fall. And I guess that's my only thing, is that if they continue to have the impotency going forward and they continue to have some of these defensive struggles, then this is, you're absolutely right, Frank. 5 points, that's for a relegation battle team, that's a whole lot. 7 points for Palermo, that's even more. But if Empoli stay on 22 points for the remainder of the season, it may not be as hard as what we thought.
No, it may not be. It may not be. And we've been saying for weeks, it's been Crotone, Palermo, and Pescara, but Empoli's sweating now. So you never can tell. Probably the most eye-catching result of the weekend. Richard, remember when Genoa at the Marassi Stadium was such a tough nut for everybody to crack? Good times, wasn't it?
Yeah, that lasted all of a month.
Yeah. Genoa 0, Atalanta 5, all the Papu Gomez in this one.
Chessi, palla bassa, il controllo del gol, Papu Gomez, del gol del 5-0, tripletta di Gomez.
His hat trick led the way in a rout, and like we said, over a team that was, at least they were good at home at one time, and now they're just not good. Andrea Conti and Mattia Caldara joining Juventus in fall 2018. Andrea Conti going to be going somewhere soon. Helping Atalanta keeping hold of fifth with the win. Dylan, nice to see a team like Atalanta doing so well and shaking things up and really in a great position to grab a European spot.
Well, and in an important week where they get the opportunity to play first over Inter Milan as well, the big thing for them was not only the opportunity to go and get those 3 points, but to put as many goals past Genoa at home that they did. Also keeps them in the running for goal difference if that should that end up being a tiebreaker that's necessary. You know, like you said, it is all Papu Gomez. One player that has to be pointed out in this particular match, though he's been pointed out quite a bit this season, is Frank Kessié. Pertic and Conte ran that right side. I mean, looking at the passing map, the right side was where Genoa broke down, and they broke down hard. And it's very difficult to ignore the potential class of what Frank Kessié could put out, because he's got the size of a defensive midfielder, he's got the brain of a box to box midfielder, and he's got the footwork of a playmaker. And when you've got a guy like that, as well as, you know, the pace of a Kurtic, you've got a wing back in Conte that's as capable as he is at putting a good ball into the box. That's a scary thing for a lot of teams, and it's part of the reason why Atalanta are currently sitting in continental place ahead of Inter Milan, ahead of AC Milan, ahead of Fiorentina. It's very, very difficult to break in from the stage that Atalanta has been in for the last several years, and they've gone and done so all in one fell swoop. So not only credit to the scouting team for bringing somebody like Kessié through, but also, again, you have to look at Papu Gomez. He's been a massive talent over the course of the season, and he really, really put on a showcase today. He was untouchable.
Yep, absolutely. And, he's going to be 30 during the season next year, so it's hard to – I mean, if Atalanta want to cash in on him, it's hard for me to gauge what they'll really get for him. You know, it's not like he's doing this and he's 23 and he's lighting the world on fire. You know, Alexis Sanchez during his time at Udinese, you know, before Barcelona decided, or before Udinese decided to cash in and selling to Barcelona, you know, but great to see guys like this, Richard. You know, we've talked about Papu Gomez a lot this season. You know, jump off the page here and maybe go against the norm. We have certain players that we have high standards for, and they always get there. But you know, when a player like Papu Gomez turns up and has the kind of season that he's has, it's fun to see.
Yeah, it's that unsurprising player that comes by and surprises you. He's a fantastic player despite his size. He seems to play twice as what his height is. You know, he's got such great vision. He's got a great passing ability. His shot, he can obviously score. He had a tripletta today, a hat trick. He's such a good player, and you know, I don't know what the value is for him, especially with his age. But it's great to see stories like this where a guy seemingly comes out of nowhere and then starts playing phenomenally. You know, in his towards the end of his career, I guess if you're looking at it age wise, I don't know. Maybe he'll play till 39 like Paolo Maldini, but. As of right now, typically players in his position do not last as long as that. So it'll be right. You know, it's just a great story, and we'll see how long it goes.
Yep, absolutely. Atalanta again in fifth, sitting very comfortably, in a Europa League place. A team that's trying to get back in the Europa League discussion. Fiorentina 1, Bologna 0, and it was somebody other than Nikola Kalinic scored for La Viola today. And at the same time, a Kuma Babacar sighting in Tuscany.
Cross a cercare Babacar, di testa Babacar! Fiorentina in vantaggio! La rete di El Kuma Babacar al minuto numero 51.
And as I mentioned, that goal and that win for Fiorentina might have put Fiorentina back in the top six discussion. Dylan, we think Paulo Sousa is on borrowed time, though. If they can somehow do a miracle here and get into one of those Europa League places, does that save his job?
I think it at least puts a stopgap on whether or not he'll go. I think it's clear by now over the course of, at the very least, this season, if not also looking back to last season, that it's probably about Sousa's time. Fiorentina do need a little bit of a mix-up. They've been doing, if not the same thing, very similar things for a little while now, and it's keeping them on the outskirts, and more it's keeping them far enough away from those continental places that there's no real sign of surefire improvement. And that ultimately has to become a problem for a team like Fiorentina, who used to be in those continental places, maybe not necessarily year in, year out, but they were constantly in the discussion for it. So will it save his job for good? No. But I think much in the way of some managers, if he gets into those continental places, they'll give him a shot at the beginning of next season. And if it starts off as poorly as what has been standard for Sousa's Fiorentina the past 2 years, then you have to say see ya.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, their next three at Sampdoria, then Empoli at home, and then Inter at home. So they figure out a way to get 7 out of 9 out of these, then it does get a little interesting here. I don't think they're going to do that. In fact, I think they'll lose next week at Sampdoria. They're in touching distance, and you know it only takes a couple of these teams in front of them to just completely self-destruct. I'm with you, Dylan. They've gotten stale under Paulo Sousa. I think it is time to freshen things up. And clearly, if they fail to make top six, which is what they're still on course to do, it's time for Fiorentina to move on. And then finally, Pescara 1, Milan 1. Richard, the sooner Milan can do away with Gabriele Paletta, the better.
Yeah, he's got as many own goals this season as some players have goals in a whole season. What the hell is wrong with
him? He has cost Milan anywhere from six to eight points this season. I'm sure I can go back into all of the games that he started in and point at things that said, because he did this, we dropped, we dropped points. They've been in my heart for over 30 years. I can't... they're one of the few sports teams when I talk about them, I say we. It's just one of those It's just one of those habits. I know I'm supposed to back off and be unbiased as a reporter here on this show, but it just, I mean, what a
but screw it, Paletta's an asshole.
There you
thank
go.
You, thank you. You know he was at Liverpool for a cup of coffee, and he didn't help you guys out either. So
what's sad is he may be the second best defender in Milan right now. Well, I mean, I still got room for Gomez. I still got a thing for Gomez. I want to see him. You know, I think he can still develop. But Paletta currently is the second best defender, which is terrible.
Gustavo Gomez is one of these guys that just he's one of those guys that you sign him and it's gonna he needs that first year to just adapt
exactly
to the league and to the demands. You know, and then from there you hope he kicks on, you know, so and it's hard to throw a project like that in the heart of your defense, you know, and give him so much responsibility. So Paletta's the starter by default, but you know, whoever these owners are going to be, if it's still Berlusconi and he's sitting as the president and Yonghong Lee and they're drinking wine together, I hope that somewhere in their budget they're going to put a defender next to Romagnoli that can actually play, that knows how to pass a ball and not give Donnarumma a ball that he can't deal with. And commits stupid fouls. He gave a cheap free kick to Pescara there, I think it was in the second half, and got a yellow card for it.
Yep.
The attacker was going nowhere. I mean, it's time to move on from this guy. But obviously his own goal, played a ball that, you know, you would expect to see a 15-year-old pass, not a professional footballer, bouncy, hard to control, hard to deal with. And of course, Donnarumma struggles with it and it gets past him, goes into his own net. And that puts relegation doom Pescara up 1-0. But the Rossoneri did equalize at the break, and they did that through Mario Pasalic.
Bacca prova ad arrivarci. Ancora mira con Pasalic! Pasalic! Gira per il gol dell'1-1!
Milan have to look at this as 2 points dropped in their pursuit of a top six place. You're going to be in the Europa League. If you're trying to qualify for Europe, Dylan, don't drop points to the team that's in dead last.
Well, without question, absolutely. The big thing that I found in this match, and you guys are going to know better than me, AC Milan struggles, and there's no two ways about that. But what really upset me with AC Milan in this particular match is they allowed themselves to be, to put it bluntly, dumbed down to Pescara's level of play.
Yep.
And there's a reason that they're at bottom.
Indeed.
The game was frantic. The game was disorganized. It was scatterbrained.
Yep.
Where AC Milan, especially with the talent that they have in this squad, obviously you guys have talked about a couple positions that need upgraded, absolutely. But with the talent that they currently have, with the youth that they have, one of the primary things that they're going to have to develop and develop quickly if they really want to get back into, you know, into these continental places, into the upper echelon of what is Serie A, they're going to have to learn that at 14 to 18 of the stadiums in Serie A, they're going to have to learn to go and play and dictate the way that the game is played. Until they're able to do that, then there will be these odd-brained games where you've got a great attack that just can't string a pass together, and it's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Usually when you have a team like Milan who has 65% possession, who has over two times the amount of passes, who has three times the number of shots, when you have that level of dominance, typically whenever you look at presence in individual thirds and where passes are, they're very, very different. So, for instance, AC Milan only had 15% of their passes in the defensive third. They had 53% in the middle third, and they had 30% of their passes in the final third. When you have that level of dominance, usually you end up seeing something very, very different from the other team. But because they allowed Pescara to dictate the way that the game was going to be played and allow for that sort of scatterbrained nature of this particular match, Pescara almost matches them point for point in terms of percentages. They had the same amount of time in AC Milan's defensive third as they had in their own defensive third. And that creates a huge problem. And when the game ends 1-1, the unfortunate part is that you want to say that you're surprised because they're the last place team. But whenever the game devolves to that level of, you know, 22 individuals rather than two clubs playing against each other, that's the way it's going to look.
Yeah.
And that's no fun.
No fun at all. I mean, Richard, it almost had to feel like Milan thought, oh, it's Pescara. We'll just throw our shirt on the pitch and we'll get 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what it was. You know, they dumbed down to their level, like just like Dylan said. They clearly should have won. They should have won this game very easily, and they obviously played down to their opponent's level, and it just seemed like they were confused at what to do, especially in the last third. I mean, obviously when, you know, Lapadula came on and he had some little bit of influence because I guess he wants to score against his old team. Other than that, it was pretty much it was just a boring game. I mean, they didn't do what they had to do. A team that wants to be in Europe will find a way to get a win out of this. Not just a point, but a win. They failed to do that. So their chances of making, you know, Europe are dwindling now as the season goes on. I mean, they're going to have to string some victories here. And I mean victories, not just points, victories for the remainder of the season if they're going to have any shot of European. And I'm talking about Europa League, not just Champions League, Europa League. If they want to get Europa League, they're going to have to win a lot of games for the last eight or whatever has left.
Well, a potential lifeline is on the cards for AC Milan because the 10th game of the slate has not been played yet as of this recording. It will be played on Monday. It is Inter at home to Sampdoria. Free Patrick Schick.
That's right.
Gianpaolo, please. You have no excuse anymore. Muriel is hurt. Patrick Schick better play this game from the start. Dylan, you seen this kid play?
I have not. Tell me about him.
Czech Republic international glides with the ball. That's probably a fair thing to say about him, right, Richard?
Yeah, he's like a young Ibra at Ajax.
Yeah, I mean he's reminding people of, you know, Ibra when Ibra was at Ajax. I mean, it's a lot of pressure to put on a kid like this to out and out compare him to Ibra. He's scoring goals. He's coming on as a substitute and scoring goals. You know, Sampdoria had been set with Bruno Fernandes in the trequartista role. Luis Muriel, who had been having an excellent season, and then 80-year-old Fabio Quagliarella starts for this team. So, and then Schick comes on as a substitute. And in Quagliarella's defense, he scored some goals and he's been involved. So, but Patrick Schick is a talent. He's one for the future. He's one that we've been touting the last several weeks here. And it could be a great opportunity and a great situation for him against Inter. Now, it's Inter at home and it's Sampdoria away. And under Stefano Pioli, Inter have been a lot better at home. They had that hiccup against Roma. They're playing much more positive football since he took over from Frank de Boer. You've got Mauro Icardi, who's on 20 goals, where Dzeko and Belotti are on 23 goals. Certainly Icardi has been watching all weekend and saying, now it's my turn. And then you've got the attackers for Sampdoria. And let's just face it, as much as the improvements Inter have made, Dylan, defensively, they can still be taken.
They can, and it's Inter is a team that year on year continues to shock me because they're the kind of side that if you look at that side on paper, then there should be no issues, and there are always issues with Inter Milan, which I'm sure as AC Milan fans you guys are very, very happy with, but for Inter Milan fans it's always a bit of a strange one. There's always room for improvement in any side, but Inter's a team that has been consistently underperforming for a while now. They definitely were under Frank de Boer, which shocked me. Again, as a Liverpool fan, I was under the impression that I would prefer to have Frank de Boer at our club once upon a time. He's clearly shown that while he is still a great manager, you don't do what you do at Ajax without being a great manager. He's still got some growing to do before he steps onto the real stage. They have improved since his departure, but they're still continuing to fall short. There's no reason that with the team that Inter Milan have, that Atalanta and Lazio should be in front of them. They should be well set in fourth, if not challenging for that Champions League spot that Napoli currently resides in. It's confusing. It will remain to be confusing until it stops. Their one shining light right now, as I'm sure you guys agree, has to be Mauro Icardi.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's another one that's got excellent support behind and around him. When you've got players like Ivan Perisic, you've got Eder Benega, João Mario has popped up and played really well in spots this season. Ever since he joined from Atalanta in January, Roberto Gagliardini's been very good. So the cast is there. you know, very weak at the center of defense. Richard, let's talk through. I mean, the last time we saw Sampdoria, they were hosting Juventus. They were beaten 1-0. This was before the world, before the international break. You know, no shame in losing to Juventus, but look at this run of games for them. Beat Milan 1-0 at the San Siro. 3-1 win over Bologna. 1-1 draw with Cagliari. 1-1 draw with Palermo. Okay, oops. 3-1 over Pescara. 1-0 in the derby against Genoa. You know, before that, 1-0 defeat to Juventus. So they're popping up and getting some wins and getting some results. Now Luis Muriel is out. Can they do this without him?
It'll be tough because Inter are a very formidable squad, you know, especially now that Pioli's got them playing pretty well. It was always going to be a difficult matchup against Inter, you know, even if they had Muriel. But now that they don't, he's been very vital for them this season, and the fact that he's not going to be there, I think it's going to not bode well for them. I mean, yes, Patrick Schick hopefully will get some playing time, but even unless he has an unbelievable game, gets a hat trick, I do not see Sampdoria getting a result out of this matchup. You got, like you said, 80-year-old Fabio Quagliarella, who's kind of like Borriello, where he plays well on the provincial teams, but not on the big stage. He can only do so much. You know, he's not going to be able to outpace any of these guys on Inter Milan. It doesn't look like it's going to bode very well with them. And Inter, yes, they can be beaten, but I don't know if Sampdoria's their run of playing well may come to end this tomorrow, because Inter they can possess the ball. They're a very good team, and right now they're flying. They're full of confidence. So I fully expect an Icardi show, if you will.
Okay, so you think Inter win big tomorrow then?
Yeah, I'm thinking like a 3-1 or something like that.
Okay. Dylan, what do you think?
I think you have to give it to Inter, free Patrick Schick or otherwise. Sampdoria, they've put together a string of performances, but Inter Milan, you know, especially with Atalanta having the win that they had over the weekend, they've got some additional motivation to make sure that they go out and they put in a performance. And this is a team that, you know, Sampdoria is kind of in a unique position where they don't really have anything to lose. There are 8 games left, but they're currently 10 points behind Fiorentina in 8th. So the 9th is probably the highest they're going to climb unless someone absolutely shits the bed, which at this stage you can't really predict. They're in a point where they don't really have anything to lose. So you could see some more open, free-flowing attacking style play. But Inter Milan, quote-unquote, do have the quality to deal with what Sampdoria has to offer. And so long as they go out and they do the task that's necessary, then they should find themselves back in 5th place by the end of the match.
Sure. I think Inter's going to win this one as well. I think there's going to be goals in this game, though, because I think, you know, Sampdoria playing with some confidence here. Inter playing with a lot of confidence, but I think Inter is still naive defensively. So, you know, Richard, you said 3-1. I'm going to say 3-2. I think this is a goal fest.
Is it a brace for Patrick Schick?
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. I say Schick pops up in 2 goals, has his breakout game. I don't call a hat trick for Icardi to get him into a 3-way tie with Dzeko and Belotti, but I think he gets 2. And that 3rd goal is going to come from a very odd source. A João Mario, Benega, somebody like that's going to pop up and score. So I give it to Inter 3-2. So we all think Inter's going to beat Sampdoria. Your thoughts on this game, your reactions to this game by the time you probably get this podcast, the game will be in the process of playing in all likelihood. Go to @SeriaSitDown on Twitter or Instagram with your thoughts. Now we will move on to previews of the second leg of Coppa Italia. And the Coppa Italia, it's strange to me why they decide to do, you know, it's single game knockout all the way to the semifinals, and then they decide to do 2-legged semifinals. That's just lovely. Let's just pile up the fixtures even more, especially for someone like a Juventus who's also trying to win a Champions League. It's just, I never understood it. Why do they do that, Richard?
To piss us off. I mean, no one likes it. I mean, if you're going to do 2 legs, do it through the whole freaking tournament, through the whole knockout stage. Don't do it just the semifinals. It's like a little teaser. Hey, you see the finals? Yeah, you're not going to get there quite yet. Give it another month. It's stupid.
It just, it blows me away. I mean, well, I mean, they do it in England with the what are they even calling that tournament now?
They change it every year. It's the Capital One Cup right now. I'm sure that'll change with a new sponsorship.
Yeah, and they do that too. It's single game knockout until the semis, where they've got to play two legs. I'm sure the teams that are still left love that in January, in the middle of a January transfer window, which is actually meaningless. But then this year in particular, when if you've got players going off to African Cup of Nations duty, and so that thins and it potentially thins your squad even more. I'm sure that's met with such positive feelings. So, but anyway, there is a second leg to these. Tuesday is Lazio v Roma, and Wednesday Napoli v Juventus. And we'll start with the Lazio Roma game. Lazio lead 2-0 on aggregate, two away goals at the Olimpico. Now they're at home at the Olimpico against Roma. That's what you get with these derbies and teams that share the same stadium. Dylan, how do you see this one? How do you see this one shaking out?
I'm not sure how the match will end, but I do know that Lazio will come out on top, simply because, to be completely honest, I don't think Roma care. They got the bigger fish to fry at the moment with the league. While it would be nice if it doesn't work out to walk away with a trophy, I think that their eyes are going to be set to, whenever they play this match, I think it's going to be set to the following week rather than the match itself, especially with a two away goal difference to overcome. I don't foresee it happening as well as what some Roma fans may like to see.
Yeah. Roma, Richard, the lineup wasn't, it was strong on Saturday against Empoli. The center of midfield, though, it was, some notable absentees, Kevin Strootman wasn't even in the team at all. And I think he was actually serving a suspension. And Daniele De Rossi also didn't dress. Some of these guys that had been in the heart of the midfield were missing. So, Roma still fielded a strong side. Do you agree with Dylan's assessment that their priority is the league and that they're going to look at this and say, we'll put 11 out there if we figure out how to do it? Or is it the passion of playing your city rivals and not going out to them, en route to a final?
Their motivation may very well be the league. If I were them, it would be Coppa Italia, because your chances of winning a title this year are better in the Coppa Italia than the Scudetto, just because the point difference right now. I think they're going to still field a strong lineup. I think De Rossi and Strootman are going to play in the Coppa Italia. But I think this 2-0 lead that Lazio has is too much to overcome. And I think Lazio, they're in fine form right now. They're a fantastic team. Immobile is scoring goals for fun. I think at best it'll be a draw or a one-goal win for Roma at best. And so I don't think Roma's going to have enough to do what it takes to overcome Lazio and that two-goal advantage from the first leg. So,
Sure. And Lazio fielded a reasonably strong side as well. They didn't start Keita Balde.
Yeah.
They've been doing that. They've been doing that lately, though, where they bring him on as a substitute in Lulic. Starts in that three-man attack on the left-hand side. That's exactly what they did again here. And then that midfield was Parolo, Bilia, and Milinkovic-Savic. So, Lazio really didn't, Lazio didn't really play any reserves or anybody in the Sassuolo game. So it'll be interesting. I think they're going to be unchanged from the game at Sassuolo. Because that's their best team. I think that from a depth standpoint, they're a lot thinner than Roma are. I think Roma are going to try to come out and chase this thing, but it's just going to take one from Lazio to get it done. And I agree with Dylan that Lazio are going to go through in this. I think this is going to be a knife edge kind of game. I'm going to go 1-1. I think it's going to be a derby where I hope it's a derby. I hope it's, two teams, same area, same city. They hate each other, and we see that kind of passion on the pitch, and we see we see goals that we can cheer, but we see that kind of passion. We see hard tackling. We see guys getting after each other. We see Roma going out of the way to make sure. Okay, if you go to the final, you're going to be limping there. So, or the other way around, if Roma put up a few goals, I want to see that kind of passion. that you would typically see from a derby. So I'm in agreement with you guys. The other one was the other second leg semifinal. Oh gosh, that was so fun today, guys. Let's do it again on Wednesday. Napoli and Juventus, of course, is what I'm talking about. And that game today that left a lot to be desired, they're going to go out and do it again on Wednesday. Dylan, Napoli have the away goal, but Juventus far too organized for them. And this means a lot to Juventus. They're in position for a treble still.
It does. And it's as much as I would love to back, you know, who I consider to be my team in Serie A. We saw what Juventus does whenever they come to a tough place to play at home. San Paolo, especially this season, has been, you know, a bit of a fortress for Napoli. And clearly, based on the way that, you know, this weekend has gone, it won't always be that way if you put the right quality team out there. I don't think we're going to see a completely reinforced Juventus lineup. I think we're still going to see a bit more of a professional performance. The nice part is that they can still easily get away with that simply because they have such a lead at the current time that the likelihood of Napoli going and putting you know, two past them, even to win on level goals because of the away goal is very, very unlikely. Napoli are going to have. They're going to have the motivation because they know that at this stage they have to consider themselves out of the title race. But again, as you said, Juventus, they have a treble on the cards here. And at this stage, why would they want to give up that opportunity? Not that a double is really all that bad, all things considered, when one of those trophies is the Scudetto. But yeah, they're going to be just as motivated as they were this weekend. And I don't foresee Napoli turning this fixture around.
Richard, Arkadiusz Milik aside, Napoli had their best attack out there today and could only get one. Does that hurt their confidence going into Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely got to put a damper on it. I think the game on the Coppa Italia matchup will be more entertaining than today's, purely for the fact that Napoli need to score goals. So I feel that they're gonna come out much like they did against Real Madrid and trying to attack. So you're going to see, I think, a much more entertaining game from that aspect. I still think it's Juventus' match. But, you know, not having Arkadiusz Milik, who's a good player. I mean, he didn't play today, and he's not playing as well as he did in the beginning of the season. But not to have him is definitely got to put a damper on their party of trying to catch up and beat Juventus ultimately.
He's the kind of forward that could give those defenders some trouble in terms of some aerial situations.
Yeah, he's got the size. No one else does on that team.
Yeah, nobody else does. They're all midgets. It's you know, the only big guy they got out there is Koulibaly. You know, I mean, no wonder why Sergio Ramos scored twice on him. Yeah. I mean, it's just you know, Koulibaly can't mark everybody on corners.
No. And Juventus got a lot of big players who can score headers.
Well, and that's just it. And you've got some guys that are going to play from the start that didn't play today. Alexandro has got to play from the start over there on the left. And that's just going to make Juventus stronger defensively. He's clearly better for the Juve setup than Asamoah is. You know, Alves may. I wouldn't surprise me to see them go back to Lichtsteiner again. But, you know, that'll be an interesting one.
What about central defense? You think Rugani plays and maybe Barzagli play? Because since they didn't really play today?
If Barzagli plays, I think those little quick forwards of Napoli will have a whole lot of confidence.
Right.
Because he is just getting outrun by everybody now. I mean, he's showing his age.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting decision for Allegri to make. I think he's going to assess Chiellini after, you know, going 90 today and saying, hey, can you go another 90 on Wednesday and just kind of see where he's at. So I think a lot's going to hinge on that, but that's an interesting one. You know, I think that the rest of it's made up, and I don't think Dybala is going to be risked from the start.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be Pjanic kind of handling all the set piece duty and that sort of thing. I think it's going to be another draw again here, guys, on Wednesday. I think 1-1, and I think just like today, Juventus is going to be happy with it and on to another cup final. What do you guys think?
I think that that's fair, to be completely honest. As much as it pains me to admit, I think it's draw erring on the side of a second Juventus win to put Napoli out.
Yeah, Richard.
Yeah, I don't see Juventus losing. They may get a draw. I think a draw is very likely because I know Napoli will try to go out and score, but you know, Juventus are just going to feed off the mistakes by Napoli and counterattack and get some goals of their own. So I think the way Juventus comes out is they're going to make sure it's another professional matchup. They're not going to lose. They're just going to probably play the draw. If they can get a couple goals, especially if they get a goal early, they're probably going to set up shop and it's done for the game.
Agreed.
But if Napoli gets that goal early, it'll be interesting to see how Juve take that, you know, because Napoli are going to obviously get more confidence if they score early. That first goal is going to be key in that matchup. So look out for that, because that could really tell how the game shapes up ultimately. If it stays 0-0, you know, it's going to probably end that way too.
That is where it's going to get interesting, if Napoli can get an early goal. I mean, they were in this exact boat in the Champions League, coming back 3-1 down and now hosting the second leg. They got the early goal. They got everybody, you know, people were there. I mean, they were getting there, and they had the chance to make a second to make it really interesting against Real Madrid. And then Real Madrid got to start taking corners, and then it was over. So, you know, but so I think it's going to be interesting. I think we're looking at a Juventus-Lazio final for the Coppa Italia. I don't think much is going to happen over these next couple of games that is going to change the current advantages that those teams have going in. What do you all say? Go to @SeriaSitDown on Twitter and Instagram. Give us your thoughts on these Coppa Italia games. We'll finish with a quick look at match week 31. We have Atalanta against Sassuolo, Bologna against Roma, Cagliari against Torino, Crotone against Inter, Empoli against Pescara, Juventus against Chievo, Lazio v. Napoli, Milan v. Palermo, Sampdoria v. Fiorentina, and Udinese v. Genoa. There's a couple games here that are really interesting as far as how the table is playing out. Dylan, which one of these gets your attention?
I mean, I think the main one has to be Napoli-Lazio, especially with their respective positions on the table. That's going to be the highlight of the weekend. But I think it's also going to be necessary to point out Empoli-Pescara. Obviously, that's going to be two lower end of the table. But because that fight is continuing to get closer and closer, why not watch them? I also am going to be interested to see how Roma go up against Bologna at home. Bologna have been very topsy-turvy this particular season, and they seem to be, despite this past weekend. Am I quoting that correctly? One second.
Yeah, they lost to Fiorentina.
Yeah, despite this past weekend, they seem to be a little bit more on the up based on the way that they have played. You know, against Fiorentina, it was a little bit boring, but these things will happen from time to time. So, you know, they've got a chance to go and crush some dreams against Roma whenever they come to town. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Sure. How about you, Richard?
You know, obviously Lazio-Napoli is going to be the matchup to watch. But for me, other than that, I also want to tune into that Empoli-Pescara matchup and then see how Crotone plays against Inter, because that was, you know, Crotone, Empoli, and Pescara are all fighting for or trying to avoid relegation. If Crotone can somehow get a miracle point out of Inter and, you know, Empoli lose to Pescara, it'll get very, very tricky there. I also want to see Atalanta-Sassuolo. That just seems like screams goals in that game for some reason. Whether it's Atalanta getting all of them, or, you know, I think it's going to be like a 3-2 game or a 4-2 game, something like that. I think goals are going to be for sure that matchup. And then, you know, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say the other matchup I was really looking forward to is Sampdoria and Fiorentina, just because, you know, I want to see how Sampdoria does, especially if Schick does get some play time this week and he does play well for some reason. Then I'd like to see if him and Muriel, if he's back from injury, if they can play together, or will it be just the same lineup as before? Because, you know, Sampdoria have been rolling before this injury, so, you know, they could give Fiorentina a run for the money.
I agree with all of these games. I'm most looking forward to Lazio-Napoli. You know, this could open up a race for third if Lazio can come away with the 3 points. Because not only would Lazio be intrigued by the right results here, Atalanta could. And if Inter end up beating Sampdoria tomorrow, They're all in play for third, and all of a sudden we go from who's all, you know, four teams fighting for the three Europa League spots to now having a handful of teams fighting for that last Champions League spot.
Yeah.
And it just could add to the intrigue. And yeah, and exactly, the Empoli-Pescara match. Empoli have to flex their muscle and win this game. You know, they've seen some stuff here from Omar El Kadouri, who has, you know, kind of started to give them a little bit of a pulse going forward. They're going to need him to be tip top in this one. You know, but those are the two that for me, you know, jump off the page. The Sampdoria-Fiorentina game, it feels like these are two teams that are just, they're where they are. They're not going anywhere.
Yep.
They could play the game on a parking lot and no one's going to give a shit. That just, and it's unfortunate because there's a lot of talent on both of these teams. Your point, Patrick Schick, we've talked about, you know, and some of the players that Sampdoria have, but, you know, Fiorentina still have some reasonably decent players. Nikola Kalinic is still playing like Fiorentina are playing for something, you know, and Federico Chiesa has proven to be a strong young player. You know, Bernardeschi, if he can continue things. So, you know, there are some interesting players that bring a little bit of quality and could make that game entertaining. So, you know, as for the balance of it, it's, you know, they're all interested. And obviously, as a Milan supporter, I'm hoping they can bounce back. I mean, 3 points at home against Palermo is a must before the derby. You know, get that done and get in a position where that derby gets very interesting because it could be potentially for a European place. But yeah, that's the match week 31 preview. Lazio-Napoli is going to be front and center on all of it. And your thoughts on these games, again, Serie A Sit Down on Twitter and on Instagram. Give us your thoughts. That's going to put a bow on this edition of Serie A Sit Down, and we'll take a quick social media check. Richard, where can we find you?
You can find me at r_Carman, K-H-A-R-M-A-N.
And Dylan, if they want to give you a follow, where can you be found over on Twitter or in the realms of social media?
Probably the easiest way for anybody, not that I've been terribly active here recently, is on Twitter at Baker_Dylan. That's spelled D-Y-L-A-N because, as listeners to me on other podcasts know, I am not a heathen. I don't do that D-I-L-L-O-N crap. So you can find me there. You can find World Football Index at World Football I, as well as the variety of places that I talked about at the beginning of the podcast. And yeah, give us a listen. Got a lot going on.
Great stuff. Great stuff. And I hope our performance review is glowing to you and the higher ups at World Football Index. So
this is the first podcast I've been on, and I'm sure that it shows in a couple of months. So even if it went poorly, I had a lot of fun. So you guys are fine.
All right. Well, good. Good. Richard, we can show up late to work next week.
Nice. So,
yes.
Nice. We'll. I don't know about that, but anyway, but yeah, you can find me at FTC_21. And as I've repeated over the course of this podcast, at Serie A Sit Down on Twitter and on Instagram, always give your thoughts there. So, you know, thanks again for, you know, listening to us rant and ramble about the game on the peninsula. Do look forward to our podcast next week. In the meantime, be sure you keep telling your paisans about us. Ciao.